Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolo Village Studios. This is Ben Bueller Garcia, usually the host of American Warrior Radio, heard Saturdays at noon right here on KVOI. On today's show, we'll be talking about Memorial Day. If you'd like to interact on this very important subject, give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That number is 520-790-2040. This weekend we'll be observing Memorial Day holiday. As someone who regularly interacts with the military, it's a particularly sobering day for me. Thankfully, I have never personally felt the sting of losing a family member in war, and I hope that describes all of you too. But there are families in our community for whom every day is Memorial Day. I ask two things of you this weekend. Do not wish a veteran happy Memorial Day. I was at an event where someone made that mistake and the veteran replied, "Don't thank me, I didn't die." Second, sacrifice a minute for those who sacrificed their lives. All of us enjoy what freedoms we have today because someone paid for them in blood. If you don't personally know one, find one. The internet is full of them. Repeat their name. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show today are two guests who do have a personal connection with the cause of freedom, if for different reasons. Our first guest joined the Army in 2011 and was deployed to Afghanistan in 2013. As a military police soldier, she volunteered for a very special duty, to become a sentinel. Ruth Robinson would be trusted to guard the tomb of the unknown soldier. She was assigned badge number 643. Ruth, thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show.
Hi, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Ruth, thank you. I got choked up just on that introduction, so maybe you'll carry me through. When I think of, as a civilian, when I think of hallowed military ground, two places come to mind right off the top of my head, Ruth, the USS Arizona Memorial and the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Now, you and your fellow sentinels have guarded that tomb every minute of every day since 1937. What inspired you personally to volunteer for that duty?
To me, it was the highest honor that I could ever think to be able to hold in the United States Army while serving on active duty. And to be able to guard the unknown, those who gave everything, their lives up to including their identity, and their family members never to know what happened to their loved ones who went off to war. And for me to put a little bit of service and sacrifice, the epitome of that selfless service towards guarding the unknown is one of the things that really pushed me to that. And my husband's great-grandfather actually died in the Bataan Death March, so he easily could have been part of the family of the unknown, but thankfully he was repatriated back after the war.
Now, Ruth, from what I've seen, your entire family, you've got an extensive family tradition of service. I mean, brothers, sisters, fathers, grandfathers, all across the board. Is there anyone in your family who hasn't served recently?
Well, my mom, but her dad served. So, I mean, I kind of count that as serving, especially she had three kids, all of which deployed, but thankfully at different times, so we weren't all away at the same time.
Okay.
My husband serves too, so.
Sure. My goal today is just to educate people, and thankfully I know we've got the right person, but you're also... You know, I mentioned badge 643. There's only been not very many more than that badges issued to sentinels who guarded the tomb. So it's a pretty elite group. But even more than that, correct me if I'm wrong here, Ruth, but there's only been five women soldiers who've been selected for that duty, and you're one of them.
That is correct, sir. I'm the fourth of five.
That's pretty. I don't know how many people landed on the moon, but. That's a pretty exclusive club you belong to, and I definitely elite. They've been. I read an article once, Ruth, where they described the Sentinels as the ceremonial special forces. Definitely an elite group. Only what 20% of folks even make it through the initial acceptance to even get into the training, and even fewer make it through that part.
Yes, they have an extremely high attrition rate.
And why is that?
It's just the amount of, the dedication to that duty and being able to understand and to perfect the guard chain, to perfect your uniform, and to memorize the knowledge. And it's not just that, but you have to want to be down there. So if you don't have a desire to be down there or you started out and you think you liked it, but you realize that it was not good for you or your family, then they just, you know, go back up to where they have a normal schedule. Our schedule is normal to us of working every other day for 5 days and 4 days off. Those 4 days aren't really off because you're working on your uniform. So it really is like you have to put your whole life into it. And it is a family down there. You would have, you know, wives or husbands or children that would come down so they'd be able to see their family after the cemetery closed and things like that, because we do spend so much of our time dedicating it to our trade down there.
Ruth, at any given time, how many Sentinels are there? I mean, not literally kind of walking, but on duty.
Yeah, it really just depends on, you know, if anybody is on leave, if anybody, you know, is for some reason not ceremonially able to perform the duties outside, because you can be in training and working that day, but you may not be able to actually go out and perform the duties yet to a standard to where you can be out walking the mat or changing the guard. So at a minimum, you know, you need at least three or four, one to change and then, you know, two to walk. That's a minimum. Now, we definitely have more than that. But having that three can get you through the day, but it's a very, very, very rough day if that's all you have.
Yeah, that sounds like a really long day. I want to come back to the badge for a moment there because, as you can tell, I kind of sort of did my research. The Sentinel's badge, the tomb badge, it's the third least or maybe the second least awarded badge in the military or in the Army?
It was the second least awarded until they created the Army Horsemanship Badge for the caisson platoon. So now it's technically the third to the astronaut and to the caisson platoon. But the caisson platoon awards theirs at a much faster rate than we do. We average about 10 a year. So we're at 688 right now. And that's taken, and that's only since 1958. So it's taken quite a while to get that in high.
But it's also the only military badge that can actually be revoked.
Yes. So if you go to jump school, you have your airborne wings for life, no matter what, as long as you pass the school. But these, for the tomb guard badge, if you do anything while you're in the military, you're out of the military, say you get a DUI or something worse, you know, you can have that revoked.
And tell me why, from your perspective, that is. I mean, clearly, if someone takes the time to either be there present at Arlington or to watch the videos on their computer, perfection is a word that comes to mind. And is that because that is sort of the Army expects that once you've reached that pinnacle, you're to maintain that and the rest of, you know, that perfection and the rest of the things you do going forward in your life, whether you're in the Army or not?
I think it's the Army, but I also think that it's the Sentinels themselves, that we hold ourselves in such to a high standard that we expect that throughout our life because of what we did and, you know, the dedication we show to the unknowns, that we continue that throughout our life. Whether you just go and live a normal, regular life and you're good, you know, have a nice, nice, relaxed life or whatever you have go on, I think it's just we kind of check ourselves too because we have a very small group, a very small brotherhood, and we do communicate pretty frequently to each other and we hold ourselves and each other to that high standard.
I'm glad to hear that. Now, speaking of tradition, probably the most there's lots of tradition that goes into what you and your fellow Sentinels do, but obviously the most visible one is the 21 steps. And I don't know, march is probably not the right word. What do you call that procedure that the guards are going through?
We call it marching.
Okay.
So whenever you're on the mat, you're marching, or you can say, you know, walking the mat is another term.
Okay, so describe that, you know, why 21 steps, why not just an about face, why the shift in the side on which one they carry their weapon?
Yep, so the 21 steps goes back to the 21-gun salute, which is, you know, the seven volleys of three, so it's the highest honor in which you can bestow. We do it for fallen service members and or, you know, different visiting our other military folks who come in will have a 21-gun salute. And so 21 steps is homage to them. So it's 21 steps on the mat, 21 seconds facing the tomb, turn down the mat, and you change the weapon to the side nearest the crowd to symbolize that you're actively guarding you are that force, that protection between the crowd and the tomb.
And what, unfortunately, Ruth, I've never been there. That's on my punch list of something I have to do before I die. But when I see that, is just, what is the tomb itself surrounded by barriers from the public, or is it just one side? It looks like there's some bleachers or some steps there on one side.
Yep, so the front side, which is the stairs, that's the side facing D.C., there is a barrier of railings at the bottom of the stairs. Those stairs are mostly used for full honors wreath ceremonies where color guard or different platoons will march up to do full honors ceremonies. Otherwise, it's unused. And then up on the back side of the side where the guard change takes place, there's railings all around as well to keep the public off of the plaza.
Ruth, when we come back after the break, I'd like to talk more about the traditions and what you and your Sentinels do. And also, I really, really wanted you on the show because, again, when I think about places that come to mind for Memorial Day, I mean, yeah, I mentioned at the top of the hour that for some families, Memorial Day is every day. And for you and your fellow Sentinels, Memorial Day was every minute of every day when you're on that duty. Ladies and gentlemen, I will walk my tour in humble reverence to the best of my ability. It is he who commands the respect I protect, his bravery that made us so proud. That's from the Sentinel's Creed. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in on the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios for Bill. Feel free to give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That number is 790-2040. A real special opportunity. We've got a guest today that is one of only five women soldiers, to ever serve in her position. We're talking with Ruth Robinson, who was a guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier and still serves our nation today. Now, Ruth, you were enlisted when you served as a sentinel. You've since been commissioned as an officer, yeah?
Yes, sir.
And so what is your current rank?
I'm a first lieutenant in the Army Reserve.
Okay. You know, one thing, Ruth, I've learned over the years of doing American Warrior Radio, sometimes you all are so proper and yes, sir, no, sir, it doesn't get it done. We got to fill some time here, Ruth.
Okay.
I'm just giving you a hard time. Now, there were...
No, it's all right.
Part of the reason that you were brought to us is not only did you serve as a sentinel, but if I get this correctly, you are the chairwoman for the Education Committee for the Society of the Honor Guard, correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you're the perfect person to talk about this. And I want to talk a little bit about that organization a little bit before we're done, too. But some facts. One of the things that people may not know, the tomb, the memorial itself has or is to honor the unknowns, as you call them, from each war, each conflict. There were four, if I'm not mistaken, remains buried there, but now there's only three, correct?
Yes, that is correct. The Vietnam unknown was disinterred and identified in 1998.
Do you know, are there any plans, Ruth, for someone from the current conflicts?
I would say no. With all the DNA technology and dental records and things that we have now, I won't say the chances are none, but I would say they are extremely slim.
Interesting. Okay. I never thought of that. Now, there was something else that I found interesting. My brother served in the OSI, in the Air Force, and it was their, I don't know if it was rules, but certainly tradition, they would not wear rank. Because in the nature of what they did, they didn't want a colonel telling an E2 that, no, you can't investigate me. And I found it interesting that the Sentinels have something similar in that when they're doing their walk, when they're performing their duty there at the tomb, they also do not wear rank on their uniform.
That is correct. So traditionally in the old guard, E4 and below also do not wear rank on their ceremonial uniforms, but we also do not wear it because we do not want to outrank the unknowns. The only one who wears rank on the plaza is an NCO who would be changing the guard. Now, if I'm walking the mat as an NCO, I do not wear my rank.
And I just so I get this straight, because at any given time when someone is walking, is it just the one soldier, the one guard, there are other guards posted around? And usually how long is that? They do an hour, they do 2 hours, and then take a rest, or how long does that last?
So when they're walking the mat, it's just the one guard that's out there. It's the guard change when you see three tomb sentinels out there, the guards changing out and the one doing the guard change sequence. So the non-commissioned officer who's doing the all the commands and the weapons inspection. And in the summertime, the walks are for 30 minutes, and in the wintertime, they're for an hour. At night, they can range anywhere from 1 to 2 hours, depending on, you know, weather, how the individual is feeling, or what the requirements are, if they just need, you know, more training, or they want to be outside walking at or guarding at night. So that's why they're a little bit different at night hours.
Is that by design? I mean, is that sort of, you know, one soldier, one guard to reflect kind of the loneliness of the entombed there? Or is that just the way it works out?
That's just the way it works out. So the order that to put a guard there, just so they, an armed guard will be there. And so we are the one armed guard out there. And with the way it's blocked off, because originally there was no railings that there are now, so the visitors could be right next to the mat as the guard walked, and slowly over time they kind of pushed that back. And there's other, you know, security people around that that are there, but as far as mm-hmm. the tomb, it is just the one guard out there at a time.
Well, and I don't get a kick out of it, but I mean, you know, YouTube is replete with videos of people that, you know, the kid that dropped a bottle of water, or the, you know, the lady that tried to thought she was special and could sneak around the chains to get a little bit closer, and the guards took care of that business pretty quick. And now I know, Ruth, you can't talk about this for security reasons, but my research tells me that that weapon they carry is a fully functioning rifle, and we'll leave it at that. How's that? Now, what misconceptions and facts. One of the other things you'll find out there on the internet, and of course it's got to be true because it's on the internet, Ruth, but sentinels cannot swear in public for the rest of their lives.
That's a complete myth.
But probably comes from that idea of, you know, risking losing your badge, huh?
It might be, but I know when we're on duty, obviously we have the utmost professionalism, but we are also all human beings and do things, you know, so the drinking myth, the tobacco myth, the swearing myth. So we're all just normal human beings as well.
So I'm not familiar with those. So according to that myth, you can't swear, you can't drink, you can't smoke.
Correct.
Wow. That would be some tough. That's tough off duty, Ruth. The gloves are wet. True or false?
They are wet. So the gloves, when we put water on them, it helps with the grip of the rifle because the rifle has a polyurethane coating over it where it would be extremely slick. So the wet gloves help it stick to your hand so you have more control over it.
Okay. And then the other thing that people need to remember, it touches me so much, Ruth, is every minute of every day, all year long, 365 days a year, rain or shine, you know, you can see images and videos of the sentinels out there doing the walk in snow. And there was an unsubstantiated rumor that years ago, and I can't remember which hurricane it was, but supposedly the guards were told to abandon their posts and they refused, but no such order was ever given, correct? I mean, it didn't happen.
They were given the option that they could, like, seek shelter, and they said no, as far as I understand. Now, don't quote me on that for being the end-all, be-all, but my understanding is that they were told that they could seek shelter from the weather, and they did not.
Is it a sort of special badge of honor if you happen to pull duty on one of those days or nights when it is stormy or sleeting or winter weather, or is it just, it's your duty, you do it?
It's kind of one of those, it's a really neat experience because we've had days that are just torrential downpours. And so you know that your shoes that you spent hours shining are going to be completely obliterated and you're going to have to put so much effort back in to getting them back up to the standard or on the snow days. But it is so peaceful to walk in one of those snow days. It's so quiet. You can hear the snow landing out there. It's just a different environment that you get to enjoy. It's got its own serenity with it.
You know, Ruth, when the guard is out there, it's solitary, and you've got a lot of time to think, I'm guessing. What's going through a guard's mind? Is it just like, okay, am I on step 20 or 21, or what was going through your mind sometimes?
A lot of it is being able to count to 21, because folks will stand there at the rail with their little phone out and try and time you and see how close you are to your 21 seconds. Just making sure my rifle manual is good, making sure my walk was the standard that it should be, And, you know, when I was doing the guard change, it was focusing on the cadence of my command so that we could have a good sounding, good looking guard change. But at night, it's a little bit different. We're out in our fatigues there at night. We're able to walk more of the plaza because it's dark out and be able to see kind of the area they're guarding. And so you can kind of, you can have different thoughts out there. You have thoughts of, okay, these unknowns that are out here, have their families or friends ever actually been here to the cemetery and paid their respects? And, you know, it could have been that those are actually family members that are right there in the ground on the plaza.
What I'm guessing serving as a sentinel, Ruth, is something you really carry with you the rest of your life. What are your thoughts on that? And what should our listeners, you know, particularly the civilians, be thinking on Memorial Day?
Just the honor and respect, just the remembering of what Memorial Day is for and what it's about. Yes, they use it as the official kickoff to summer. But I think back to when the World War One unknown came back, was brought over here to the United States, and the tens of thousands of people who lined the road and went up into the Capitol building and paid their respects because their family members were never returned, or they could not be identified, or they were never found. And that's what I think about a lot, is because that could have happened in my own family. Like I said, my husband's great-grandfather passed away in the Bataan Death March, and he could have been an unknown. Thankfully, he was not. But it's something that close that really brings it full circle for me. Is just, you know, you think about all the families who never had the chance. You know, Uncle Johnny or Daddy went off to war and never came back, and you never heard from him again. You just maybe got a letter saying so and so is MIA or KIA or unfound.
Outstanding. Now, Ruth, again, folks can visit tombguard.org to learn more about your organization and what you all are doing to continue to educate people about this important subject and just that hugely important duty that you and your fellow Sentinels have conducted. And Lieutenant, thank you so much for your service, and thanks for how you continue to tell the story to people.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming up, the Siege of Khe Sanh was one of the most ferocious of the Vietnam War. We'll be talking with a Marine who was there and lost 274 of his comrades. Stick around. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Socolo Village Studios. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill. We're talking Memorial Day, and next we're joined by a man who has personally witnessed the price paid in blood and why we should pause this weekend. Ken Rogers served as a Marine and saw combat in Vietnam, including the siege at Khe Sanh. That epic battle pitted 6,000 Marines and Vietnamese allies against 20,000 or more communist North Vietnamese troops. Thanks for joining us today, Ken.
Glad to be here.
Well, Ken, I tell you what brought you. You produced a documentary about you and what your fellow Marines experienced at Khe Sanh called Bravo Common Man, Uncommon Valor. I highly recommend everyone watch it any day of the year, but that certainly was on my mind coming up to Memorial Day. Ken, you know, we as civilians, we see the tombs. We just had the sentinel on who was a woman who was a sentinel at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. We see the graves, but thankfully, we've never had to experience what, you know, the moments that led to that final, very final conclusion for each man and woman. And I tell you, one of my takeaways, Ken, from our previous talk on American Warrior Radio, I want to read this quote because this is something that folks need to hear. You just don't know what it's like to see a 19-year-old kid lay down on his belly in the mud and stick his rifle in that direction and give you a thumbs up to tell you to go in that direction. And he knows damn good well he's never going to get up out of that mud. He knows he's dying for you. He's dying for you. Veterans know that, but civilians maybe should also think and appreciate that from time to time too, huh, Ken?
Yeah, I think so. You know, one of the things about combat or being in a combat zone with a bunch of mates, and in my case it was always men because no women served, but there's a special bond that I think is created kind of like a family. It's not like your family, but it's kind of like a family, but it's different. It's short-lived for the most part. For me, it was like a lot of these guys only knew 2 or 3 weeks, but there is some kind of relationship that is created between you that is so special that somebody's willing to die for you.
Ken, that bond is, I would guess, developed regardless in the military. That's part of the training and part of the rationale of the training, to be able to, you know, have individuals function as a unit. But really, the forge of combat, of being under fire, that just, what I hear you saying is that just really strengthens it even more.
Well, you know, the reality of it is that you need everybody that you serve with, because that might be the person that saves your life. And nobody really talks about that very much, but it's in your head, and you certainly want to take care of everybody, be willing to take care of everybody there, because that might be the guy that helps you out when you need it. And so that whole mind frame is in you while you're eating chow and drinking coffee and standing watch and filling sandbags and digging trenches, and when you're out on patrol and when you're in a firefight, although when you're in a firefight, you're not thinking about that kind of stuff, but you react based on the emotional intelligence that you've developed in service with other people.
If you can, briefly, Ken, describe to us the chaos that was Khe Sanh. I mean, at some point, even the supply aircraft, as I understand it, I mean, they weren't even rolling to a stop. I mean, they kept moving. Marines jumped out the back. You threw the body bags in the back, and it took off again. I mean, that just must have been a nightmare.
Well, it was just, it was a small space. I think it was about a half square mile, and there's 5,000 guys crammed in this, and the enemy's out there, and he can see you, and they've got big guns, and doesn't take them very long where they know everybody, where everybody is on the base, and they know how to shoot you, and they know where you are in terms of the what we call GPS coordinates now, but they could put a coordinate in the guns and based on a map, and they could lay a shell right in on you. So it was like death was stalking you 24 hours a day, and you couldn't do anything about stopping it. And that included all the aircraft coming in. And for a while, they even stopped landing. They were parachuting stuff into us. And then when they did land or come back, they had figured out that they could roll down the airstrip, drop the tailgate, and they put all the supplies on skids, and they would let a parachute come out, and the air would get in there and drag the skid off, and then the human beings would have to jump off before they stopped. And then they would turn around and take off. And it was, it was crazy. I mean, people were getting blown up all around you all the time. And depending on what the North Vietnamese were interested in doing in any particular moment in time, they would target particular areas of the base, and they would just pour hundreds of rounds in on us. And, you're laying in the bottom of a trench, and they're hitting all around you, and your only thought is the next one going to get me?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it was like.
Ken, and correct me if these numbers are wrong, but 274 of your comrades didn't survive that battle. Another 2,541 wounded. I can hear it in your voice, Ken, as you're describing that situation. So often there's sometimes a sense of survivor's guilt. Is that for our veteran, particularly our combat veterans out there on Memorial Day, is that a time for you where that comes up again, even so many, all these years later?
Yeah, not so much. I know for a lot of people it is. A lot of people have serious survivor's guilt. I don't think ever really had that in a big way. I mean, I have it occasionally, but not like a lot of guys do. So I'm not a good one to ask that question, to be honest with you.
So. You're more of an expert than me. But really, that over the years, Ken, and talking to veterans and doing my show and just interacting and supporting those families, particularly when it comes to Memorial Day, I will say, as a radio host, that is probably the most difficult show for me to do every year. And I never served. I'm just a translator. But it's interesting to me, Ken, the variety and the diverse opinions that I get from veterans about, some folks just feel really wrapped around the axle that it's a time to advertise, a mattress sale, whereas others are like, look,
It's a celebration of life. I survived. You know, if you want to go out and have a barbecue and you know, pop a couple of beers, good on you. It's America. That's what they died for, is your right to do that. You know, maybe, you know, pop one beer for somebody who's not around with us anymore. And then you've got opinions everywhere in between. Where does Ken Rogers fall on that spectrum?
Well, you know, I've been thinking about this today in anticipation of talking to you. And, you know, when I was a kid, the thing that I remember most about Memorial Day was my dad was off and my mother was off and we got to go somewhere. And the most important event happening was the Indianapolis 500 car race. And that was the big deal around our house. And my dad was a veteran. He wasn't a combat veteran, but he was in World War II. So I think that's something that we've had for a while. It's not new that let's go have a party. Let's go to the lake. Let's go water skiing. So I'm raised in southern Arizona. That's what you did. You went water skiing at Apache Lake or Saguaro Lake or Canyon Lake, one of those places. And, you know, you cooked livers and everybody laid around and got a sunburn because it was the start of summer. And Memorial Day, I don't think that's not what Memorial Day is. You know, Memorial Day is a day for people who died basically for me in combat. And that's who we're honoring. People will say to me, you know, they don't say happy Memorial Day because to me it's not a happy day.
Right.
But they acknowledge that I was a veteran, and that's not the day to do that.
Yeah. And
Veterans Day.
I agree, Ken, and that's one of my bugaboos. I want to talk more about this when we come back, Ken. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got 10 more minutes to interact with our just superb guest. If you'd like to ask a question, give us a call on the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management line, 790-2040. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill in the Green Things Sokola Village Studios. We all send best wishes for quick healing out to Bill. Bill, I love doing the show, but Tucson needs you back soon. Get better, brother. Welcome back. We're talking Memorial Day. We're spending some time today with our second guest, Marine veteran Ken Rogers. You can learn more about just his fabulous documentary. Visit bravotheproject.com. Rick called the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management line, 790-2040. Rick, what are your thoughts?
Well, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Just swell, Rick.
Good. First of all, I appreciate what this comment about Memorial Day not being Veterans Day. They're two different days. But I will also tell you my experience almost 50 years later was, yes, the tenacious environment when you're dealing with in a military exercise and having to put your lives on the line. But I also think that our memories, my memories, are of the laughs we had, are of the other things other than just the military actions. I worked the flight deck of a carrier during Vietnam, and very intense. But more importantly, it was the camaraderie that you developed around your peers during the downtimes, if you will. And I think that's the memories that we smile about, we laugh about, and we got a group of us, and we had a reunion 3 years ago, and there's a lot of us not here anymore, but we call ourselves now the Ben Gay Brigade, because, you know, we're just up there. Our bodies are feeling the repercussions of whatever. And so to my fellow veterans, the memories are what sort of keeps the life alive. And so I will leave it at there. And the phrase, once a Marine, always a Marine. God bless you, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Ken, what are your thoughts about that? We're both, unfortunately, in that part of our lives where we're probably attending more funerals than weddings. And, you know, some funerals are very, very somber, very, very structured occasions, where others are more truly a celebration of life. And you know, I see Memorial Day that in a similar vein. It can be both. It's not a zero-sum kind of a discussion.
Well, I think that depends on who you are and what your outlook on life is and what your outlook on your service is. If you're a veteran, and I generally don't go to funerals, so, you know, my comrades die, I don't go to their funerals. You know, I choose to remember them as they were alive, and I agree with your caller there in most regards that the memories are what really matters, but it all goes back to events that were based on violence, basically. I mean, you laughed, we laughed. Yeah, it was black humor in the Siege of Quezon. The only humor you had was black humor because you were going to die in about 20 seconds. Mm. That's basically how I feel about that.
Fair enough. One of the things, and folks, I encourage you to go, you know, find Bravo and watch it. One of the most powerful, or some of the most powerful moments in your documentary, Ken, are when you're talking to, you're filming some of the survivors of that battle, and they're not saying anything. I mean, they're not speaking, but I mean, you can just see it in their faces, in their eyes. Do you, having been around for a while, coming out of Vietnam, we as a nation, Ken, are coming off our longest war ever, hopefully now. I say coming off that. Hopefully it's all shut down for a while. But do you see any differences on how the general public looks at Memorial Day over those years? Certainly you and your fellow Vietnam veterans weren't treated the same way.
Well, I think that service people get a lot more respect than they did when we came back from Vietnam, and I think that's a great thing. And I think Memorial Day is probably more reverent in that regard. I think that, you know, I live in Idaho, which is a state that really supports veterans and always has, even when they weren't supporting veterans in other places in the 70s and the 60s. I think they were here. And Memorial Day is a really somber and big day here in a lot of regards. So I think, yes, probably over time, the respect and the understanding that, you know, it's not the warrior. Don't get mad at the warrior. Get mad at whoever sent him over there. Mm-hmm. You need to get mad.
Right. Don't hate the war. Don't hate the warrior.
Right.
Ken, all of us can do something. I happen to do it via radio. You know, and I'll get the phrase wrong, but, you know, as long as their names are spoken, they'll never be forgotten. You, Ken Rogers, do it through film and your documentaries. Bravo was superb. Tell us about, you've got a new release out. Tell us about I Married the War.
Okay, that's when we were filming Bravo, one of the men that we interviewed told my wife, he said, you know, Betty, he said, you're a veteran too. And she started thinking about that. And over the course of our travels here, meeting thousands and thousands and thousands of families and veterans and wives of combat veterans, she started thinking about the long-term effects of combat on the home front. And so we interviewed 11 women all the way from World War II to the current combat that we've been in here until just recently, and asked them basically a series of questions about what it's like to be married to a combat veteran and the effect it has had on their home front. And it's a powerful film that points out that what combat veterans know, that it's never over.
Mm-hmm.
The war is never over. And that's for your family, too. You know, you come home and you have survivor's guilt and you have PTSD. And if you're a lot of these young guys, you have a traumatic brain injury. And all of this stuff doesn't really go away. And the people that you live with, you know, suffer with you in their own ways. And so that's a lot about what the film is, but it's also about these women who stuck with their husbands. So some of them over 50 years. So
none of these were Gold Star spouses, I'm guessing.
No, no. Okay. Well, the only we have one spouse on Earth who, after 40 years, her husband committed suicide.
Oh, no.
And that's a poignant story. But most of these are people. I mean, when we set out, we didn't know what we were going to get, and we, you know, we worked with the people that would work with us, and most of them that were people that had made the had somehow managed to make it work. So. It's about, not only is it about what it does to the family, but it's also kind of a celebration of commitment and love and marriage and honoring your spouses.
Well, so, I'd like to see it sometime. When can I do that, Ken?
Well, it's in the film festival circuit now, and some of these big film festivals don't want you screening the film, so we'll probably have it available in November. So.
Okay, well, that's fair. That's fair. I don't like people listening to the podcast before they and not tune into
sure.
the show. But yeah, so Ken, we mentioned celebration, somber. Just don't, please, do not, you know, go up to a veteran and say Happy Memorial Day. It's not the right day for that. What other things should our listeners be hearing, Ken?
Well, you know, I think that's really important that. That it's not a happy time. And the other thing I think, you know, is like, be careful when you tell somebody thank you for your service. You know, it's not something you just throw off because you're supposed to. You know, it's something that you should say to somebody because you really mean it. And if you don't really mean it, don't say it.
Ken Rogers, good advice. Thank you so much. And if it's a Vietnam veteran, say welcome home. Ken, thanks for spending your time with us today.
You bet. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's 525,600 minutes in a year. You can afford at least one on this weekend to honor the memory of those who sacrificed their lives so that you can enjoy yours. Thank you for sharing your time with us, ladies and gentlemen. Check out Buckmaster Show podcast at buckmastershow.com. Until next time, please, however you celebrate Memorial Day, please do so safely. Bye-bye.